This is London Calling.
The Brexit bribe. Dangerous dogs. And did Britain's Foreign Secretary think he was in an 80s comedy sketch? That's all coming up on this week's episode of London Calling. I'm Graham Mack. How's it going, Mick?
I went camping with the wife over the weekend.
Yeah.
And there's this caravan next to us, and this bloke came out of it, and on the back of his shirt had the Reverend.
Right.
And he was talking to us, and he says, "What are you up to tonight?" And we said, "Oh, we got one of these little portable DVD players, we're going to stick a film on." And he goes to me, "I've got plenty of porn in my caravan if you want some."
Plenty of porn?
Porn, yeah.
Yeah.
He goes, me and the missus like watching porn all night, and he was about 50 years old, and he goes, "Oh, by the way, my name's Reverend," whatever his name was, and we're looking at each other thinking, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah.
And then he says to us, "If you hear a load of noise in the night, don't worry about it, it'll be me and the missus, we'll be at it."
What?
And this is a vicar, or what he's supposed to be, a vicar, and then he tells me this story. It's quite funny as he goes. He says, there's a Reverend walking down the road, and there's a boy playing with something. So the Reverend goes to the boy, "What are you playing with?" He said, "Prussic acid." The Reverend goes, "You can't play with prussic acid, it's not good for you." And he says, "Well, you play with holy water, that's good for you."
Yeah.
And the vicar goes, "I've put some holy water on a pregnant lady's belly, and she passed the baby." And the kid goes, "Well, that's nothing. I put some prussic acid on my dog's testicles, and he passed a Ferrari."
Now, what church does this Reverend belong to?
I don't know. But on Sunday, he said he's got a prayer meeting.
Is that right?
He has to go and do this prayer meeting. But we and the missus are looking at each other thinking, what the hell?
Is it the Church of Perpetual Indulgence? I mean, what is this?
He told us about the initiation when you get married, that you've got to share your wife with some of the vicars on your wedding night.
What? This is a cult. You've stumbled on a cult leader.
It's crazy. But we did laugh about it, but every time we come out of his caravan, we sort of hid in the tent.
I bet you did. What a creepy guy.
Really, really creepy guy. Yeah, really bad.
Hey, Mick, thanks for sharing.
Thanks, Jack.
Thanks a lot, mate. Jeez. The British Foreign Secretary, Boris Johnson, did a terrible radio interview this week. Now, for you to understand one of the references in it, I'm going to play you a comedy sketch from a show that was on in the 70s and 80s on a Saturday night here called The Two Ronnies. Ronnie Corbett and Ronnie Barker were brilliant comedians and character actors. And this particular sketch is a parody of a TV quiz show called Mastermind. Just need to tell you a couple of things. The peerage is the list of people in Britain who are lords and sit in the House of Lords, our upper house. The directory of them is called Berks. And the word Charlie's refers to women's breasts.
And so to our first contender. Good evening, your name please.
Good evening.
Your first heat, your chosen subject was answering questions before they were asked. This time, you have chosen to answer the question before last each time. Is that correct?
Charlie Smithers.
And your time starts now. What is paleontology?
Yes, absolutely correct.
What's the name of the directory that lists members of the peerage?
A study of old fossils.
Correct. Who are Len Murray and Sir Geoffrey Howe?
Berks.
Correct. What is the difference between a donkey and an ass?
One's a trade union leader, the other's a member of the cabinet.
Complete the quotation, to be or not to be?
They're both the same.
Correct. What is Bernard Manning famous for?
That is the question.
Correct. Who is the present Archbishop of Canterbury?
He is a fat man who tells blue jokes.
Correct. What do people kneel on in church?
The Right Reverend Robert Runciman.
What do tarantulas prey on?
Hassocks.
Correct. What would you use a ripcord to pull open?
Large flies.
What sort of a person lived in Bedlam?
A parachute.
Correct. What is a jockstrap?
A nutcase.
For what purpose would a decorator use methylene chlorides?
A form of athletic support.
Correct. What did Henri de Toulouse-Lautrec do?
Paint strippers.
Who is Dean Martin?
He's a kind of artist.
Yes, what sort of artist?
Pass.
That's near enough. What make of vehicle is the standard London bus?
A Singer.
Correct. In 1892, Brandon Thomas wrote a famous long-running English farce. What was it?
British Leyland.
Correct. Complete the following quotation. I've started, so I'll finish. Complete the following quotation about Mrs. Thatcher. Her heart may be in the right place, but her...
Charlie's aunt.
Correct.
Listen out for the reference to that to Ronnie sketch in this interview that Britain's Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson did with Eddie Mair from BBC Radio 4. Eddie was asking Boris about government policy. You see, we had the state opening of Parliament, where we have a thing called the Queen's Speech, where the Queen reads a speech written by the government, which lays out the government's plans.
Last July, in Downing Street, in her famous Just About Managing speech, on the day she became Prime Minister, Theresa May described several burning injustices, as she put it, in our society. I want to look at them. What does this Queen's speech do to make sure the criminal justice system stops treating black people more harshly than white?
Well, there are measures in the, the bill on the courts, which I think is supposed to address some of those issues, and I think one thing in particular that we are looking at is measures to hang on a second. There are all sorts of measures that we want to take to ensure that we do not discriminate against everybody, and I think you'll find that the Prime Minister has been strong on that in her response, particularly to the attack in Finsbury.
Well, let me help you a little. She's talked about a race disparity unit, an audit,
right,
which we publish later this year. It's going to highlight differences in outcomes in every area, including criminal justice, but offers no solutions to the burning injustice that she highlighted. I want to ask you about another burning injustice. What does this Queen's speech do to help white working class boys go to university?
Well, one of the things that we want to see is good schools for everybody and greater investment in our schools. And so I think perhaps the most important thing that the Queen's speech does is continue to have to support economic growth for this country.
Well, I can tell you that in the speech and in the Downing Street briefing notes,
invest in our education.
Working class aren't mentioned in neither university.
Can I just make my point? The objective of the Queen's speech, there are three objectives. The first is to make sure that we have a good Brexit, a successful Brexit.
I'm asking you about getting white working class boys to university.
And if you'll forgive me, I'm coming to that point. What we want to see is a fantastic educational system with better schools, and to make sure that we make sure there's a ladder of opportunity for everybody. So what we will do is support schools, in particular academies have already being sponsored and supported by universities, as you know. It's a great part of their outreach work, and access to higher education for all sectors of the community, particularly white working class boys, is one of their priorities.
All right, so let me turn to another burning injustice that she highlighted. What does this Queen's speech do to improve mental health care?
Well, what we want to see on mental health care is a proper understanding. And there, indeed, I think you will find, to get back to your first question.
Well, why don't we do the questions in the order I'm asking them?
It's
not a two Ronnie sketch. You can't answer the question before last. I'll tell you what this Queen's speech says.
It
promises a review of the laws on mental health and a discussion paper on children's mental health. There are no policies, just a review and a discussion from a party that's been in government for 7 years.
It also mentions the injustice that you spoke of earlier, which is that too many people under the current Mental Health Act come from ethnic minorities and who are sectioned and who end up in police cells as a result of the current procedures, and we want to try to address that. So I appreciate your desire to sort of push me around, but that is
to deal with the burning injustices which Theresa May herself highlighted
I've tried to give you some answers.
Well,
to
let
those
me ask
things.
You about another one. What does this Queen's speech do to help young people buy their own homes?
Well, what we will do is go forward with a massive program of house building under
every government says
Sajid Javid, and we're going to build 1 million homes by 2020, another 500,000 by 2025.
How does it help young people buy them?
Well, because we will make the objective of a vast house building program is to increase accessibility and affordability, and that is what we will do. And I might mention, by the way, that many young people are currently in the position of having to rent their homes, and they would appreciate, I think, the measures that are being what were announced today to allow to stop letting agents from charging unnecessary fees and to cap the deposits that young people are currently forced to make for their rental home. So we are going to get on with a huge program of home building. I think you're asking a reasonable point about how we can particularly make these homes accessible to young people. I think what you need to do is to have part by part rent schemes that enable young people to get on the ladder, even if they don't have the cash to pay for a big deposit. And we will be supporting those.
All right. These are all things Theresa May herself declared were burning injustices. In this Queen's speech, there's not a single concrete policy announcement in any of them. Let's turn to the policies which
if I may respectfully say to you, I don't think that's true. I think I've given you on mental health, on housing supply, on the other issues that you raised.
All right.
There are considerable measures in this Queen's speech intended to deal with those very burning injustices, and that is the ambition of the Conservative Party and the ambition of this government.
Thank you. Let me turn to the policies which less than 2 weeks ago won the support of 13.7 million voters. Ditching the pension triple lock, reforming social care, energy cap, 100 new free schools a year, an end to the ban on selective schools, a free vote on the Hunting Act, changes to the winter fuel allowance. 13.7 million people voted for these policies, and poof, they're gone.
Well, I'm not going to hide it from you that the election did not turn out exactly as we would have hoped. But as you know,
did you win the election?
Well, we are certainly the largest party, and yes, we did win the election in the sense we are 56 seats ahead of the second party, that's the Labour Party. And so it's our job to form a government if we possibly can, and to get on with what I think is a very progressive Queen's speech, and the one that as I said just now, has three important aspects. First is getting Brexit done and getting it done well. Next, obviously, is the economic measures, a very considerable investment in infrastructure, some very important measures to support our electric vehicle sector, to boost Britain's role in the space industry.
We have listed the policies earlier in the program. I appreciate weren't able to hear all of that.
Well, thank you. I'm afraid I was in the chamber, so I must have missed that. But for the benefit of our listeners who perhaps didn't take it in first time.
Well, they can catch it on the iPlayer. Why don't I ask you another question, since you're a busy man? We have a Prime Minister unable to offer solutions to her own burning injustices. She's unable to implement her own manifesto. What's the point of this Prime Minister?
Well, as I say, Theresa May won more votes than I think than anybody since Margaret Thatcher. Indeed, it may be worth pointing out, the Conservative Party got more votes this time in 2017 than we did in 2015.
And yet you can't implement your key policies.
2 million votes, And the policies that we are announcing today, I think, are excellent. And the challenge really is for Labour to say whether they would support these policies. And I see, I look at these measures, they seem to me to be progressive, they're humane, tackling domestic violence and abuse, dealing, as I've said, with overcharging of tenants, protecting people's data on the internet. These are measures that I think the Labour Party would want to say nothing of the counter-terrorism work that we are doing.
The point of the Prime Minister is?
And Theresa May has, as I say, got more votes than anybody since
Margaret
Thatcher.
That's what she did. What's her point now?
And to deliver these three objectives.
You can't say what the point of the Prime Minister is.
Yes, it is. The point of the Prime Minister is to lead the country, to give a lead on these key issues and to take this Queen's speech through. And she will. And she will do a great job. And I can tell you something. The people of this country, and I think, have had pretty much enough of elections. I don't think they want to. I think most people want a period of calm. It is true that there are some agitators out here today in Westminster shouting about a day of rage and wanting to overturn democracy and that kind of thing. I don't think they reflect the views of the vast majority of people. Right. I think most people will look at this Queen's speech, look at the measures contained in it, will see a lot to advance the cause of social justice that you described earlier, and I think that they will approve, and I hope that the Labour Party will approve and support it as well.
Thank you. Boris Johnson, the Foreign Secretary.
Donald Trump will not be visiting Britain this year as planned. But why not? The British Prime Minister, Theresa May, invited the US President to an official state visit of Britain. That was after they'd held hands on the White House lawn earlier this year. Well, last week, the Queen gave a speech at the official state opening of Parliament, but didn't mention a visit by Donald Trump. The monarch's address to Parliament usually mentions all planned state visits, but the Queen only mentioned welcoming the King and Queen of Spain in July. Donald Trump isn't very popular in the UK. If he did visit, there'd probably be large-scale demonstrations against him. There's already been a petition to ban him from Britain and a debate in the House of Commons about that. And there are more problems, because Mr. Trump attacked the London mayor, Shadiq Khan, over his response to the terror attacks at London Bridge. Donald accused him of making pathetic excuses. In response, the mayor publicly called for any plans for a visit by Trump to be scrapped. And the former mayor of London, Boris Johnson, he isn't a big fan of Donald Trump either. A few years ago, this is what he had to say about a Trump visit to Britain.
I would invite him to come and see the whole of London and take him round the city, except that I wouldn't want to expose Londoners to any unnecessary risk of meeting Donald Trump.
Well, now Boris Johnson is the British Foreign Secretary. So, all in all, it looks like the President has been uninvited. Maybe there's another reason. With multiple terror attacks here, the real threat of nationwide protests, and a mayor he doesn't get on with, maybe it's Donald that's cancelled the trip. Well, a survey of the amount of money insurance companies have to pay out because of dogs destroying things has come out, and they've worked out the worst breeds. These are the naughtiest dog breeds. I'll give you the top 10. Number 10, Yorkshire Terrier. 9, German Shepherd. 8, Cavalier King Charles Spaniel. Number 7, Labrador Retriever. 6, Golden Retriever. 5, Border Collie. 4, Staffordshire Bull Terrier. 3, a Cocker Spaniel. 2, a Jack Russell. And the number 1 naughtiest dog breed in Britain as far as costing you in money on your insurance. Labradors. Yeah, Labradors. They're costing more money than any other dog. Now, Roger, you are sitting right now next to a naughty dog.
When she was a puppy, we moved into a house that had an extension, and they hadn't changed the patio doors.
Mm-hmm.
So we took the patio doors out and put folding doors in there.
Mm-hmm.
We just had it plastered. Mm-hmm. We went to Hatfield House. When we come back, she chewed all the plaster out.
All the new plaster just been chewed to bits.
Yeah.
What's her name?
Chewy.
She's not called Chewy, is she?
100%.
Did you call her Chewy before
because
this incident?
Chewing.
This is what she got a name from this incident.
She did.
Okay. And what kind of dog is she? What breed?
She's an English Bull Mastiff.
Oh, a Bull Mastiff. Well,
she's a very, very tame dog.
Staffordshire Bull Terriers is the closest bull breed. It's number four for badly behaved dogs. Yeah, but do you love her, do you?
Oh, she's a beautiful dog. You can let the door open, she won't go out. She won't crawl across the threshold.
It's just her unusual diet that you have to get used to. Theresa May is the worst person to have as Prime Minister during Brexit. She's promised EU citizens living legally in the UK that they'll be allowed to stay after Brexit. That's as long as the same rights are offered by the EU to the 1 million UK citizens who live in other European countries. The thing is, she didn't say that as part of the Brexit talks. She said it after an EU summit dinner in Brussels. She's talking out a turn. Imagine being in the middle of negotiations to buy a house from someone you know. One night you go out to dinner with them, and after dinner you stand up and in front of everyone in the restaurant you lay out the deal that you're prepared to accept. It shows a complete lack of class. Obviously, the European leaders didn't engage in any negotiations with Mrs. May over the issue at dinner. The real talks will take place over the next few weeks in Brussels, and they will be between the Brexit Secretary, David Davis, and the EU's chief Brexit negotiator, Michel Barnier. What must David Davis be thinking? Theresa May appoints him as the chief negotiator, and then she goes off and tries to negotiate her own deal after dinner. At the actual Brexit meetings, it won't be Britain dictating the terms. It'll be the EU. Theresa May is an embarrassment. Worst behaved dogs. This is according to insurance companies. Now, beagles did not make the list, and I've never had a dog, but I'd love a beagle. I just think they look so cute. Jane's on the phone. Morning, Jane.
I've got one thing to say to you.
Yes?
Beagles.
Beagles are gorgeous, aren't they?
You don't want a beagle.
I don't. Well, I've never had a dog, but I fancy a beagle because...
A beagle is not a beginner's dog. Trust me.
But they look so cute. Even a full-grown one looks like a puppy. What's wrong with beagles?
Oh, I had a beagle called Jasper.
Right.
I was a child. He was a birthday present, actually, and yes, he was for life and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Jasper was very good lesson in why you don't want the beagle. First of all, he was a scavenger and he ate everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, building at the housing estate next door, my grandma kept having to make entire building estates of the builder's sandwiches because the dog had found theirs and eaten them.
Eating the builder's sandwiches?
Trust me, that's a lot of builders.
Okay, yes.
Packet of balloons once, took him for a walk.
Oh.
Noises behind a bush.
Yeah.
Looked out. An entire packet of balloons appeared from his bottom entirely as they went in.
Oh, so that wasn't a trip to the vet. They just went right through.
They went right through.
Yeah.
The worst was the dog obedience trial.
Mm-hmm.
My friend had a very good black Labrador called Sammy.
Mm-hmm.
And Anne and her dad and Sammy and her mum picked me up to go to Anne's obedience competition with her dog. I took Jasper.
Yeah.
And I was okay. He was on the lead. Another pocket full of custard creams welded to my pocket.
Right.
So I sort of prepared to watch. And Anne's dad said, oh, no, I've entered you too. So, first test. It was outside in an arena, roped off.
Mm-hmm.
First test was at the sit and stay. So I plonked Jasper down, muttered dire threats of awful things that would happen to him if he didn't stay where he was, and surreptitiously stuffed a custard cream somewhere near him, and walked back off down the field. You had to walk with your back to them, and of course the idea being your dog stayed.
Mm.
By the time I got back to my post, there were general mutterings of displeasure, which were turning to outraged cries. The rumble was gathering, but you weren't allowed to turn round, so I sort of was shuddering, because I knew it would be Jasper. Anyway, I got to my post, I turned round, Jasper was not where I left him.
No.
Jasper had realised that the dog next door was a bitch.
No.
Jasper.
No.
Had gone to make friends.
No.
In a very physical sort of way.
Oh, no.
I had to leg it down the field and pull him off. That was bad.
Some people see politics as a sport. Politicians love controlling people and they're hungry for power. But the serious problem of the fire hazard caused by the cladding on the tower blocks has become now a political football. Camden Council forcing people out of their homes while work's done to replace the suspect cladding. Now, no one can argue, look, if the cladding is dangerous, then it needs to be replaced. But the way they've gone about it, on Friday night, hundreds of people ordered out of their homes. People banging, we heard of people banging on doors, get out, get out, get out, as if the building was actually on fire. And some of them still sleeping last night on blow-up airbeds in the hall of the Swiss Cottage Leisure Centre because the council are struggling to find hotels for everyone. Why didn't they find the hotels first? And then, as well, when you start that, start with the people on the higher floors, the more vulnerable, and work your way down. Have a plan, do it systematically, and sort this problem. But that wouldn't have got Georgia Gold all over the TV on Friday night, would it? I mean, she's a particularly ambitious Labour politician. That annoys me as well. When the TV on Friday night was showing her, it just put Georgia Gold on the caption underneath. Georgia Gold, leader of Camden Council. It didn't put Labour. That's really important. Because this wouldn't be going on if it said Conservative. Because the Conservative government are under pressure because of this cladding thing. In actual fact, it's the local councils. But anyway, she's trying to make some political ground here. Clearly. That's all this is about. It's pure politics. If it was about safety and welfare for the residents, they would have done this properly. They're grandstanding. I mean, wall-to-wall coverage of this exodus. She must have loved it, this Georgia Gold. I'd never even heard of her till Friday night. It's the perfect reaction. It's exactly why she did this, to get her head on the telly. There's loads of ways they could have done it. But the Labour leader of Camden Council decided to go another way. She's the only one that decided to go that way, by the way, because other politicians aren't as ambitious, or other politicians aren't trying to point the finger at the Conservative government, who, let's face it, are in a shaky position after the hung parliament election. They're a wounded animal, and there are some on the Labour side that are kicking that wounded animal, and this is what we're seeing here. But what about the people who've been turfed out of their homes and they're sleeping on airbeds in a community centre in Swiss Cottage? I don't know if politics is a sport. But if it is, it's a shame that the hundreds of people evacuated from their homes didn't know they were playing. Laura, you've got a story of a badly behaved dog.
When I was a kid, my dad had a Hillman Hunter.
Right.
With a wooden dashboard.
Yeah.
And they were going up to Henlow to collect the greyhound.
Right.
So they got this greyhound and they put it in the car and they all decided to go and watch the races. When they came back to the car, the dog had ripped the dashboard out.
Ripped the entire dashboard from the car. Did you say, and the seats?
And the seats.
And the seats? He'd wrecked the inside of the car.
The whole car wasn't wrecked.
Do you think he was trying to get out or he was just having fun?
I don't know. All I remember is my dad was really angry.
And could you still drive the car?
I believe they managed to get it home.
With the inside all ripped to pieces?
Yeah.
Hey, Lorraine, thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Brexit is expensive, and we've already started paying. Finally, weeks after the general election, Britain has a government. The Prime Minister, Theresa May, called a snap election a few weeks back, thinking that her party, the Conservatives, would get a bigger majority in the House of Commons. She needed that because we're about to get ripped off by the EU over the Brexit deal, and she knew she'd become unpopular because of it. That would risk a vote of no confidence and maybe an election she wouldn't be able to win. So she called one early, hoping to get 5 years, which is the term here. Well, the plan backfired. The Conservatives didn't win enough seats to get an overall majority. Now, she's gone and done a deal with the Democratic Unionist Party of Northern Ireland to get their support so their seats count along with the Conservatives so that she can form a minority government. It's not really a deal, though. It's more of a bribe. The government is giving Northern Ireland extra cash. Lots of it. Over £1 billion. That's 1.3 billion US dollars. Northern Ireland is only a small part of Britain. Britain has a population of around 60 million people. Less than 2 million of them live in Northern Ireland. But they're going to be given £1 billion. It's been described as a grubby deal. Before the Brexit referendum, Theresa May was against Brexit. Now, she's determined to push it through at any cost, and that first cost is the £1 billion bribe to the DUP. The thing is, the DUP represent Northern Ireland, and Northern Ireland voted 56% to 44% against Brexit. Two of our supermarket chains have been in the news this week, Sainsbury's and Morrison's. There's a man on Tyneside in the northeast of England. His name is Nagra Singh. He opened a convenience store and called it Singsbury's. Well, the supermarket chain Sainsbury's got upset and made him stop, so he changed the store's name to Morrising's. The supermarket chain Morrison's aren't bothered. They kind of like it. I love punny business names. Greg.
Yeah, there's a mate of mine who I went to school with years ago. He's a year below me. And he started up his own toasty van.
Yeah.
And they go around to all the festivals during the summer and stuff, him and his partner. And they called it the Toast Office.
The Toast Office. They make toasties and they're called the Toast Office. Love it.
Ham and cheese toasties. And then he came up with another one that sells hot dogs and stuff. And they called it Notorious P.I.G.
Notorious P.I.G. because it's pork sausage.
Yeah, pork sausage.
I prefer the Toast Office as a name.
Toast Office was a very smart idea. I loved it. I think everyone does, to be fair.
Yeah, that's great. All right. Hey, thanks very much for sharing, Greg.
No problem, mate.
Bill Gates could be responsible for the end of the world. Banks, government IT systems and energy firms around the globe are all victims of another cyber attack. And as usual, it's hit computers using the Microsoft Windows operating system. Once again, not a word from Bill Gates or Microsoft HQ in Seattle. Gates has become one of the richest men in the world because of an operating system that's simply not fit for purpose. And just like previous attacks, there's been no reports of this virus affecting other operating systems like Apple, Linux, or Google Chrome. It's just Microsoft's dirty Windows. When is the world going to wake up and realize that Microsoft Windows is a time bomb that keeps going off? Bill Gates has been rewarded for designing a playground for cyber criminals. He's profited from the proceeds of crime. They say this cyber attack started in Ukraine. It didn't. It started with Microsoft in Seattle. Meanwhile, Google has just been fined 2.42 billion euros by the European Union for promoting its own price comparison service in searches. That's trivial compared to what Microsoft have done. Promoting its own services isn't going to shut down banks, governments, and nuclear reactors like Microsoft have. By designing a system that's not secure enough to keep out cyber criminals, Bill Gates is guilty of gross negligence. It should be curtains for windows. And Bill Gates should be put in a place where the windows have bars on them. Business names that are puns. Ian.
The Codfather.
Where is the Codfather? Fish
and chips? Group of fish and chip shops here in Watford.
In Watford, yeah. The Codfather.
I work in Hatfield for a garage, and one of our competitors is, his name's Al,
yeah.
And his company is Mechanic Al.
Mechanic Al, brilliant.
Yep. And I've got another bloke who's, Tim Will Fix It, does computer, things.
And what's his name?
Tim.
He's Tim. Tim Will Fix It. I don't know whether that one's going to work as well these days now. The brand's been tarnished.
He seems to be doing all right.
Is he? Okay, fair enough.
He's a lovely bloke. He's rather rotund, so
yes.
I assume he's got a good eating habit.
Yes, yeah. All right. Well, maybe he needs to go to the toast office, like Greg said about his mate who runs a toasty van called the Toast Office. Yeah. All right.
Thanks a lot.
Cheers, Ian.
No worries, Graham. Take care.
Thanks, mate. The America's Cup has just finished. New Zealand beat the USA to take home the oldest sporting trophy in international sports. Jim's on Skype from Philadelphia. You like your sailing. Did you watch the prize presentation?
I didn't watch all of it. I watched the interviews afterwards. And, you know, they did this and the boys were this and we're good for them and But it really was. They were just a better team.
The ceremony itself was like, I had to go, oh, please. The Louis Vuitton incident, did you see this?
No.
Just before they were given the cup, they were all presented with medals. And it also seemed like there weren't enough medals to go round. I think they brought more people on the stage than they'd, whoever had worked out how many medals they'd need. I think they'd brought, I think they just brought everybody on. Anyway, so they kind of ran out of medals. And then they...
Short above.
Yeah. I think they did with the USA too, with the silver medals. It looked like they run out by the time they got to the end of the line. There were three or four people at the end that just didn't get them. But in the New Zealand one, it was about eight people didn't get them at the end. And then they said, and you've got your medals there, and you also get your commemorative Louis Vuitton bags. So everyone was handed one of these Louis Vuitton bags that they didn't want. They wanted the medals and then they wanted the cup. But they were handed these Louis Vuitton tote bag kind of things. So they were handed one of those each, which they put on the floor in front of them. And then they said, before the presentation of the trophy, can you just all hold up your Louis Vuitton bags so we can get a photo for the sponsor? And I said to Julie, which sales weasel agreed to this?
Yes.
Wow. Louis Vuitton are the overall sponsors, but you have to manage the client's expectations and say, no, that's not going to happen then. We'll get you a photo shoot with the team, with their medals on, holding their trophies afterwards. But we are not holding up the trophy presentation for a photo shoot for you.
Yeah.
You'll get a picture. Don't worry. It will be the first thing we do after they come down off the podium or later in the evening. It will be scheduled in. But you're not having it then and there. And it backfired spectacularly because the New Zealand team all held up their bags and the photograph was taken and they said, okay, right now. So basically, the cup wasn't even out yet. So even Louis Vuitton missed out because the cup's not in that photo.
Yeah, that's the big thing. The actual America's Cup is
yeah.
It's the oldest trophy in international sport.
Yeah. If they'd have had it organized, they could have waited till after they'd got the cup, a little bit later on, crowd's gone away, you know, nice backdrop, maybe with the boat or something, just schedule in, just like you do at your wedding, you get married and then you go and get your photos done. They could have scheduled it in as part of the deal.
Put the trophy in the foreground, have everyone arcing, you know, in a curve around it, take a picture, done.
Yeah, but don't hold up the trophy presentation for the photo. Anyway, as soon as the photograph's taken, one of them, because they didn't want these bags. Who wants it? Who dedicates their life to winning the America's Cup and is happy with a bag? You know? An expensive, nice-looking bag, but who cares? So after that, one of them, one of the Kiwis, I don't know which one started it, he just threw his bag to somebody in the crowd because he didn't want it.
That's great.
Well, as soon as he did that, they all did that. So they threw them away. So if they are going to get another photo with the bags and the cup, they're going to have to give them another set of bags because they basically threw them away publicly as it's televised around the world. They basically went, I don't want this. And all the crowd are putting their hands up in the air like they're at some, you know, some radio station event where the guy's there with blasting the T-shirts out of the T-shirt gun, you know, or the car stickers.
Oh, that's great.
They just completely devalued the sponsor's product after the sponsor had gone so far as to make sure they... But it was just somebody, some sales weasel or corporate type just needs to just take a good hard look at themselves. That was a stupid idea.
Yeah.
And it backfired because it meant that they ended up throwing the bags away to punters in the crowd. Piper is a financial journalist.
Punny business names.
Yeah.
I had to write a story about this a few years ago.
Yeah.
About small businesses.
Yeah.
And they actually run a competition for independent shops.
Do they?
Yeah.
Right.
And I mean, this is a few years ago now, but the number one was Junk and Disorderly.
Junk and Disorderly. I think I've seen it. Have I seen a poster for that near Mill Hill?
Maybe. This one's up north somewhere, Chesterfield.
Right. There's one, it's either that name, it's either Junk and Disorderly or something very similar.
Yeah.
Underneath the flyover there, as you go down past the, there's a Porsche place on the right.
Yeah.
Porsche Craft, and you keep going towards, Brent.
Yeah.
And you go under the flyover and there's a sign, I'm sure it's Junk and Disorder, it's very similar, rings a bell.
Really? And maybe. Then there's another one called Pain in the Glass.
Pain in the Glass, there's a Glazers.
Yeah.
Love it.
Well, my favourite one, which actually came bottom, was License to Fill.
And what was that one?
I think it's a petrol station.
Thank you very much, Piper. Capitalism is a wonderful thing. I mention this because it's 10 years since the iPhone first came out. Over 1 billion iPhones have been sold, making it one of the most successful products in history. And if you don't have an iPhone, the smartphone you own only exists to compete with the iPhone. It's one of the many reasons why the capitalist system is just so beautiful. I want to say to people who go on anti-capitalist marches, feel free to protest. But first, get rid of everything you didn't make or grow yourself without spending any money. And you better get rid of all your money too. Could you give up all of those things? What about your smartphone? Could you live without that? Punny businesses. Sarah.
I've got two that I like.
Yeah.
There's a, I don't know if you've seen it, it's like a mobile valeting guy called Spandau Valet.
It's called Spandau Valet. Brilliant. And that's around here somewhere. Excellent. Spandau Valet.
And the other one is a pet shop on the way, kind of Ely way it is.
Yeah.
And it's called the Jurassic Bark.
The Jurassic Bark. Yeah.
Yeah.
I tell you what.
I like it.
Spandau Valet is going to take some beating, isn't it?
It's a good one.
All right. Let's check back in via Skype with Jim in Philadelphia. Jim, can you believe the iPhone is 10 years old?
Yeah, and I was late to the party.
I was too. What was your problem with it?
I just... My initial thought was... My cell phone, I just want to make calls on a cell phone. I don't want any of these apps or this or that. I just, it's a phone. I just want to make calls. That's it.
I had the Motorola Razr phone. And there was nothing more annoying to me than people who had an iPhone and wouldn't shut up about it. They wanted to talk about this app and that app and iFishing and the iPint and all this nonsense toys. I'm thinking, they're just toys and games. I want it. I've got a phone.
Yeah. And it's then, a phone. I want to make calls with it. That's it. I don't care that if it's a calendar or a calculator. It's a phone.
Yeah. And I never even used to text because I couldn't get on with that thing where you pushed a button and like the number 3 button and you held onto it until it became the right letter you wanted or something. I don't know. I just could never do it. I just didn't have the patience for texting. So then.
Yeah. To send a text, it took an hour. So why not just call and say, I'm on my way.
Yeah. So then I decided, I can't remember for what reason. I decided I'd quite like to text. It might be handy now and again. So I need a phone with a keyboard. And I looked at, there were phones that had full-size keyboards. You like folded them out. I thought, I'll just get that. And the more I looked into it, and then I decided, no, I want a smartphone. But because the people who had the iPhones were so annoying, I decided, I'm not getting an iPhone, though. I'm getting a smartphone, but I'm not getting an iPhone. I'm not going to be one of those people.
And I'm getting anything but.
Yeah, and I got a Sony, I think it was, a Sony Ericsson X1 or something? It was a beautiful thing. I mean, it folded out and it had a little, that was the other thing as well. I tried the iPhone in phone shops and I couldn't get on with the keyboard on the screen. Couldn't get on with it. I wanted one where you actually push buttons. So I found this, I think it was called a Sony Ericsson X1. Beautiful. It folded out. And a little like stainless steel keyboard, a QWERTY keyboard was there. That was great. I could now send texts and I could do other bits and pieces. But the more I looked at what the iPhone could do and this couldn't do, the more I realized I should have just got an iPhone. So I eventually got one and then I became one of those annoying people.
Yeah.
That you didn't want to be around. Because all I did was go on about the iPhone. Yeah. But I still don't have any, like, games or any of that rubbish on it. The apps I have are for listening to stuff, watching stuff, recording stuff. Yeah. Of course, email and everything else.
Yeah, I was late. It wasn't until it was the iPhone 3 that I first bought.
I had the iPhone 4, my friend, was my first one. That's how long I held out.
Yeah, iPhone and it was, 4. There was a sale they were on, and I had the Motorola phone. It was just before the Razr. I had...
The StarTAC?
I didn't have the I had the model just before the Razr.
The flip-out one? The flip phone?
It was a flip phone.
Yeah.
It was the something 2200. It was a bit smaller than the Razr.
Oh, I remember. Yeah, I remember those. I had one of those too before the Razr. It was a grey one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was smaller. The Razr was flatter, but these things were physically smaller.
Yeah, it was a bit smaller and a bit
fatter
as it was a bit taller.
Yeah.
And I just had that for forever. And I was home from seeing the iPhone 3. It was $50. And I said, well, okay, fine. It's $50.
Yeah.
And then as soon as I bought it, I said, why did I wait? This is amazing. Why did I wait so long to get it? And then I skipped the 4, I bought the 5, and that's still where I am.
I got the 4, and then they updated them to the 5, and I got the 5, And then the next generation, the 5S. I never got the S's. I skipped the S's and went.
So, I have the 5S. Right? So right. My thumb is, that's how I unlock the phone.
Right. Yeah. Well, I went to the 6. I haven't got the 6S and I haven't had the 7. I've stopped at the 6 because I just don't think they've come on anymore since. And I could just get it. I'd paid for it. I'd had it on a contract where you were basically paying off the phone. And once it was paid off, I decided to go SIM only. And now I pay something like 20 quid a month or something for unlimited, apart from data, I think. Anyway.
Oh, wow. That's quite cheap.
No, it mightn't be that cheap. It might be 25, I think it's 25 quid a month. And I get enough minutes to do me. It was unlimited, but I wasn't getting anywhere near. I think I get something like 500 minutes a month. I get unlimited texts. And I think I get 8 gig of data. And I don't get anywhere close to any of them. So it's as good as unlimited for 25 quid a month. I just don't worry about it. And I'm not paying anything off the phone. I own the phone now. Yeah. But I think the next one I get, I'll just buy the phone up front and then go on and just stay on the SIM only rather than this dragging it out and paying different amounts each month, you know, because the package you're on isn't unlimited this and then, oh, yeah. That's the other thing. It's just the cell phone plans are just incredible. You know, not even the deepest scientific calculator app you could download onto the iPhone could explain the cell phone plan. Just no way, you know. People like Einstein and Feynman and that was, you know, theory of relativity and that kind of stuff's a doddle compared to a cell phone plan.
Yeah.
You know, they probably sit around at MIT poring over those things going, no, I just can't make it work.
Yeah, I just don't get it.
I just can't prove this formula.
Someone's doctoral thesis is in what?
Yeah.
There's no way. Yeah. How? What?
Yeah. I see the formula, but I just can't prove it. I can't prove I owe this much this month. You know, I can see
I'm going to try and calculate next month's bill. Yeah. I've never been right. It's impossible to calculate. You can't do it.
Yeah. Gravity waves, space-time continuum, I'm okay with. Cell phone bill. No. You know, we discovered the Higgs boson before we discovered how to work out a cell phone bill.
Yeah. We discovered quarks.
Yeah.
Whatever those tiny little things are.
Yeah. Those people working underground at CERN. The Hadron Collider. Yeah. They could put all
that's
the...
That's more predictable. The outcomes there are more predictable.
And easier to calculate. Yeah. They only need a computer the size of a building to do that. Cell phone plan. You need a computer the size of a planet. Yeah. Unbelievable. It changed the world.
Yeah, that... It's everything.
Yeah. It really is.
It's a GPS. It's a TV.
It wakes me up in the morning and puts me to bed at night. You know, it the alarm goes off on the phone. I wake up. I then get shaved and washed. And before I go into the shower, I watch Sky News on the phone, live streaming. I could use the GPS to get to work, but I know the way. But but I listen to podcasts in the car off Bluetooth off the same device. So by the time I get to work, I've heard a few different things from around the world. It was Adam Carolla this morning. You know, I get into work and, you know, the traffic and travel is on there and it's just mind blowing. Then at the end of the night, you know, after I've watched a bit of YouTube, I read my current book. I'm always got a book on the go, but it's always an ebook and it's always on the phone. I'm reading Richard Lewis's one, The Other Great Depression. It's okay. I thought it was either going to be really, really deep or really, really funny. And it's not really, really either of those things. It's quite funny and it's a little bit deep. I wanted it to be extreme one or the other. I would have been happy.
Yeah.
I'm not halfway.
I do like Richard Lewis.
I do. I was lucky enough to see him live at a radio convention in Vegas. He was at this this radio convention they have every year, Morning Show Boot Camp. They always book a top comedian as for the lunchtime. And this one lunchtime, it was Richard Lewis. This was in 2001. Richard Lewis was the comedian. So he's already doing Curb Your Enthusiasm by then.
Yeah.
And, he was just great. And I'd never seen him do stand-up before, not even on video. You know, I'd seen him briefly in Curb Your Enthusiasm, but I hadn't actually seen him do his act. And, he was just great. He's really, really good. That neurotic Jewish thing. It's just so funny. You know, it's just, wish I could remember. I remember he said he walked into the dressing room when Shaq was there and saw Shaq naked and saw it and went, "What is that?" It's like, what? I don't even know why I say it. Just blurted it out. And he's talking about how he, you know, I remember that part. I don't remember what else he said, but he was great. Yeah, the book's okay. Looking for a new book after this one. I don't know where to go. You read anything good recently?
I haven't. I did see a good documentary.
Hmm.
It was on Hulu.
Yeah.
Called Becoming Bond, about a documentary on George Lazenby.
Okay. I've heard about that. Yeah. I think I saw the trailer to that.
Yeah, quite good.
I do fancy that. Yeah, the only Australian Bond. He blagged his way in, didn't he? Wasn't he a model?
Yes.
Blagged his way in. Typical Aussie.
They just really did.
Yeah.
Just.
And people now say, and I don't agree, that Her Majesty's Secret Service is one of the best Bond films. But I don't think he had the acting skills at all. He's very wooden.
I haven't seen it.
Very, very wooden. I don't think he pulled it off at all. I really don't.
I can believe.
Yeah. My mother always had a theory about him, which is completely untrue, but she's got all these bizarre conspiracy theories. There was a famous, he was a pirate DJ in Britain. And he had a meteoric rise to success. He went on the pirate radio ships in 64, which was our first commercial radio. So they were playing pop music and commercials, which the BBC weren't doing in 64. They banned them in 67. But he went on there and his name was Simon D. And he was a really big name. He had a manager. Do you know what? I'm wondering if he even had George Lazenby's manager. Anyway. Simon D was huge, and he ended up, after the pirates were banned, he had a TV show, a chat show on the BBC called D Time, and everybody that's anybody was on that show. In fact, Jane Asher broke up with Paul McCartney on that show.
Oh.
She was a guest and she announced that they were no longer a couple and he was watching and didn't know. Apparently he was cheating on her or something and she'd found him out. And I mean, it was a huge.
That's one way to do it.
Yeah. This show was called D Time. Anyway, apparently Simon D got a bit big for his boots, thought he was a big shot. He's in a movie. He's in the Italian Job movie. He was a big, big deal. And he literally disappeared overnight from the screens.
Wow.
Apparently he got too big for his boots, asked for too much money from the BBC, and he crossed the street to London Weekend Television, which was the ITV franchise on the weekend. And he went over there for even more money or something. And he tried to do the same show on a different channel, and it didn't work. And they dropped him, and he pretty much never worked again. When I moved back to Britain in 1997, he was on Isle of Wight Radio. On the Isle of Wight. I mean, he just literally disappeared. And my mother has this theory because could have maybe even been his last show. His guest was George Lazenby. This show, apparently, Lazenby had been smoking the old wacky tobacco.
Ah.
And Lazenby was apparently rambling or something. And according to my mother, who says she saw the show, because bizarrely, there are no tapes of this particular show in existence. They don't exist. No one has a copy of this show, this TV show. Apparently, Lazenby was going on about the inconsistencies over the Kennedy assassination and saying that,
wow.
Yes, something, I don't know what he said, but it was something heavy. I don't know whether he intimated that Lyndon Johnson was involved or what, but, you know, in late 60s. And pretty much after that show, neither of them worked again, pretty much. And she says that's why he was dropped as James Bond, and that's why Simon D never worked again, because Lazenby found out something about the Kennedy assassination and the FBI and the CIA. And
they were all tainted.
Yeah. And she still maintains it to this day. Yeah. George Lazenby. I bet that is very interesting. Bet it is.
Yeah, it is.
I heard he was a bit of a hippie, or he was a late 60s kind of beardy weirdy, and he didn't fancy carrying on as the old establishment James Bond character. Was that part of it?
It was something that affected it was he.
Everybody said he got
for his
sacked,
entire life.
I think he actually
he had
left,
a problem with authority.
Okay, yeah.
He hated being told what to do.
Which is
that he was a terrible student,
right?
You know, one of those sort of. Well, why? Yeah. Why do I have to do that?
Yeah.
And when it came to, he weaseled his way in so deeply into the Bond, into the role of Bond.
Yeah.
That he never signed a contract.
Oh.
Until the movie was, they didn't even tell him to sign the contract until after the movie was made.
Right.
And it was, you have to look like this, you have to do these appearances here, you have to be here, you have to do, you know, all of these stipulations.
Yeah.
And
because I don't know if they would have used the word back then, but they would have been trying to protect the brand.
Yes.
Yeah.
They basically wanted him to be James Bond for the next 6 years. I think they gave him a 6-picture deal.
Wow. Straight off. They didn't just give him the one and say, we'll see how it goes.
This was after they did the first one.
Right.
They gave him a 6-picture deal and £1 million under the table. They gave him £1 million cash.
Wow.
Up to front. Sign the contract.
Wow.
And he basically had to be the character of James Bond forever.
Right.
In appearances and the whole nine yards. And he actually went to America to promote the movie.
Yeah.
And paid his own way.
Yeah.
Because they said, well, if you're going to go publicize this, you have to shave your beard. And he said, no.
Right.
Because I'm not James Bond. I'm George Lazenby.
Yeah.
And he refused to sign the contract.
Wow, with that much money involved.
And back then, that was huge money.
So he was worried about being typecast as James Bond, as opposed to previously when he was typecast as an out-of-work male model.
Yes.
Right.
He did not want to be told how to look, how to act.
Yeah.
Don't come to the premiere of this movie if you don't shave your beard. Well, he went to the premiere and didn't shave his beard because he had no contract. He didn't want to be owned. He didn't want to be the show pony.
Right.
And at the end of it, I was just sort of, well, you know what? Good on you.
For standing up.
He wanted to be him. He didn't want to be James Bond.
Yeah.
He wanted to be himself.
Yeah. Because he did.
And for all the glitz and glamour, he just said, no, no, no thanks.
He did make a few B movies afterwards, didn't he?
I don't know.
I think he did do a couple of things.
He must have done.
I think he did something in Australia and whatever. Did it say where he lives now? Be interesting. You know, did he stay in London or did he go back to Australia? Or? Yeah.
He said he went into real estate.
Oh, really?
After he got I guess he did a few movies here and there. He got married. He had a couple of kids.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they're now grandkids. He's in his late 70s, 76, I think he said it was.
Was Licensed to Kill and then became Licensed to Sell Real Estate.
Yeah. Went into real estate, you know, made a living in real estate.
Licensed to Make a Killing. Yeah.
It's a different kind of killing.
Yeah. Well.
Licensed to Make Commission.
And what's it called again? I'll look it up.
Becoming Bond.
Becoming Bond. Okay. Becoming Bond. It's reasonably new, isn't it? I have definitely seen a trailer for it. I can't remember where I saw the trailer. It must have been on YouTube or something. Yeah.
I don't know if it's only on Hulu or where else it's.
I'll find it. That's all I'm saying. I'll find it.
Becoming Bond.
I know where to look. I'll find it.
It was one of those things that I've never seen. I knew there was one actor that did a one-off Bond, and I didn't know who it was, and I'd heard the name George Lazenby.
Yeah, well, after
just,
that,
this is interesting. I think
Sean Connery's last Bond film was You Only Live Twice. I think that's which one it was. Anyway, he'd had enough and he got out. So they thought they needed a new James Bond. So they got George Lazenby. They must have thought they were all set because the only person that had ever played Bond up until that point was Connery. And whatever went wrong with Lazenby, they decided they would bring Sean Connery back. And that must have cost them a few bob. But they brought him back for one film for Diamonds Are Forever, which is rubbish. It's rubbish.
Because and then what? Is it when Roger Moore came in?
Then Roger Moore came in for Live and Let Die, which 1973, I think, is one of the best Bond films. My two favorite Bond films would be Live and Let Die. That could be tainted because it's the first one I saw at a cinema. It's the first Bond film I saw as a cinema. I was just blown away. The speedboat chase and all the rest of it. It's great. And I love Goldfinger as well. And I don't think you can go past Dr. No. I think that was a pretty good film as well. I think I'd probably put them in that order. Live and Let Die would be favorite. Goldfinger second and then Dr. No. The rest of them... And some of those later Roger Moore ones, Octopussy and Moonraker, just crap.
Yeah.
Just awful. And Timothy Dalton's are so bad, he nearly put the franchise out of business.
Yes,
he didn't make any after. He really just, he made it so ordinary. In fact, people probably forget about him. Pierce Brosnan had to come back, who's the guy who should have had it all along. He had to come and save the franchise. Pierce Brosnan saved the franchise. He made a couple of good Bond films. That Tomorrow...
Yeah, and it was...
Tomorrow
I think
Never Knows.
Timothy Dalton only came in because Pierce Brosnan was working with... It was after Remington Steele.
Oh, was he? Right.
And NBC would not let him out of his contract.
Right, because he was such the obvious choice. But they needed... By the time he did come along, they really needed him. If he didn't get that GoldenEye right, that would have been the end of that.
I thought Pierce Brosnan was pretty good.
He was a good James
Daniel
Bond.
Craig, no thanks.
You don't like? No, I think Daniel Craig's because he's given it a more rugged, roughy, tufty kind of. I think it was ready for that kind of thing.
The last couple of ones, they're just so over the top. Might as well be directed by Michael Bay.
Okay, I get that. They're not in my. There's no Daniel Craig film in my top three. My top three is Live and Let Die. Goldfinger and Dr. No. Tomorrow Never Dies was a good one though. Brosnan. That's a good film, but it's not in my top three James Bond films. Thanks a lot, Jim. Let's talk to Luke now.
You wanted some funny business names.
Yeah, what funny business names have you noticed?
Well, when when I was a student in Cardiff, there was a halal butcher called Halal Is It Meat You're Looking For?
Halal Is It Meat You're Looking For? Love it.
Which I thought was quite funny.
Thank you so much, Luke.
No worries.
Cheers,
thank
mate.
You.
Have a good one. Well, that's it for this week. Next week, we'll be getting closer to the anniversary of Live Aid, one of the biggest live televised pop concerts ever put on. And the man responsible for the television production of that, Trevor Dann, is my guest next week. Trevor's a British writer, broadcaster. He's been associated with some of the most influential radio and television music programs over the last 30 years. Trevor Dann, my guest next week on London Calling. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Graham Mac. You want to hear more Mac Nuggets? Check out my website, macmedia.co.uk, or subscribe to my Bob FM show on Apple Podcasts. Got a question or something to say? Send me an email. Put your phone number or your Skype details in the email. I might call you back on the show. My email address is graham@macmedia.co.uk, and you spell Graham like the cracker, Mac like the truck. Till next time, ta-da.